Almost 5,000 people in an organization called Team National are in this room, and I've been teaching them all day. And I wish you were here with me, club members, because I'm telling you, these are some of the sharpest, brightest, good-looking, receptive people. You notice you made me give about 5 or 6 real attributes before you really, you made me work for that one, didn't you, hi? You just weren't going to applaud on that first one. No, these people love each other. They love their team. They love their organization. Dick and Angela have led this company now for 10 years. And I just wish you could see not only what they have done to help people, but I wish you could see their commitment to continue to help people. This is a growing, thriving organization. And I'm sure if you want to know more about Team National, you can find it on the webpage. But this is a very special convention for them. It's not only their annual convention, but it's their 10th anniversary. And they've grown from a handful of people to literally tens of thousands of people across America that they add value to. And I just want to say... And I just want to say thank you for having me. And also thank you for letting me do a Maximum Impact Club lesson here with you at the convention center. So let's get going. You got your notes. We're going to learn something. I'm going to talk to you about the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, but I just revised it. It's had its 10th anniversary edition, and it's just come out. And I want to talk about the changes that I made and do some teaching on leadership for you. So let's jump right into the intro and let's get going. Let me tell you what, my satisfaction in writing books is very simple because it involves helping people that I'll never meet. And so I love writing books because I help people that I'll never say hi to. They'll never hear me in a conference. Some of them may never even listen to me on a CD or see me on DVD. But I'm helping people. So my satisfaction is that it really allows my influence and my teachings to expand. Now, let me tell you what my frustration is in writing books. They do not change. Books don't change. They freeze in time. In other words, when I write a book, those words don't change on that page. It's almost like when I write a book, it's a snapshot. And let me tell you where my frustration is. When I finish writing a book, I keep growing, I keep learning, I keep developing. So when I go back and I read a book after I've written it a few years, I'm always disappointed because I think, oh, I know this now that I didn't know then, and I could have done better. Now, when Thomas Nelson, my publisher, asked me to go back and revise the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, because of all the books that I've ever written, it is the bestseller. It's in, my goodness, it's in over 40 languages around the world, and it has sold close to 2 million copies, and it's just the most popular book that I've ever written. And when they asked me to go back and revise for the 10th anniversary, I said I would be glad to. But I was shocked when I read it of how much change I wanted to make. I thought I'd do it like a 20% revision. I did a 70 to 75% revision. I mean, just shows you what I've learned in 10 years, or it shows you what I didn't know 10 years ago. Maybe that's what it is. But I revised it and because I keep growing, I keep learning, and I keep changing. Now, of the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, there were 2 laws that I combined with other laws. This is in your notes. Let me just give you a little background. I put the law of E.F. Hutton, that says when the leader speaks, people listen. I put the law of E.F. Hutton into the law of influence, and I put the law of reproduction into the law of explosive growth because they were cousins. They were related. What I did is I added 2 new laws in the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and that's what I want to teach you. I want to teach you the 2 new laws that I added. Now, as I get ready to teach you these 2 new laws, let me say that for 10 years, I've lectured around the world. I've given the 21 Laws of Leadership lecture hundreds of times in dozens of different countries to all kinds of cultures. And I've done a lot of Q&A, a lot of feedback on the book. And I came to the conclusion after a few years of writing the 21 Laws of Leadership that there were 2 laws that I needed to put in, if I ever revised it, that I had left out or I had omitted. And those are the 2 laws I want to teach. So let's take off and go. Before I teach those laws, let me tell you what the 21 laws says to any of us if we read the book. Number 1, it says leadership requires the ability to do more than one thing well. In other words, leadership is not simple. People sometimes think that if they can cast vision, they're a good leader, or if they can communicate well, they're a good leader. And leadership is not one thing. In fact, the 21 laws of leadership says leadership is 21 things. I was doing a conference, and I was signing books during the break, and a kid came up to me, and he was very passionate. He said, okay, John, okay, you're teaching the 21 laws of leadership. I got it. The 21 laws of leadership. I got this. Now, he said, but I've got a question to ask you. And he leaned into me and he raised his index finger. And with great passion, he said, here's the question I've got to ask you. He said, what's the one thing I need to do to be a great leader? What do I need to know? What's the one thing I need to know to be a great leader? And I thought, oh, man, this kid's got passion. So I sucked air and straighten up, and I got as passionate as I could, and I looked at him and I said, the one thing you need to know to be a great leader is that there's more than one thing you need to know to be a great leader. I said, there are 21 things you need to know to be a great leader. Sit down, shut up, and take notes. Well, when you read the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership, the first thing you realize is there's more than doing one thing well that qualifies you as a leader. The second thing I want you to note is no one does all 21 laws well. No one. In other words, when you read the 21 laws, you're going to say, ooh, I don't know if I do this well. Don't feel bad. I wrote the book, and there are 5 of the 21 laws that I'm only average in. Are you with me? And I wrote the book. First of all, those 5 things, I wasn't sure they were really laws. My temptation was to leave them out, but I couldn't leave them out because they were laws. For example, the law of navigation. The law of navigation says that, you know, anyone can steer a ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. I'm not a good course charter. I'm a big picture person. I don't really like to chart the course. I don't really like to navigate. Okay, what I'm saying is you won't do all of the lessons well, and that's okay. There's no problem with that. Because what you want to do is you want to develop a leadership team. You want to bring people around you that can complement you and do some of the laws better than you can do them. It's like a quarterback in football. The quarterback in football doesn't get paid to run the ball. He gets paid to get the ball to the right person. Hand it off. Pass it. That's what a leader does. The law in your notes, the law of the inner circle says a leader's potential is determined by those who are closest to him. In other words, those who are closest to me are going to determine the level of my success. That's the law of the inner circle. Now, what I want you to know is there's been a tremendous transition in leadership in the last 30 years. In fact, I was doing yesterday, all day long, I did radio interviews. I was in my home in Florida, and I started at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I went till 5:15 in the afternoon. And I did 36 radio interviews, one right after another. One's from Boston, one's from Milwaukee, next one's from New York City, next one's from Los Angeles. And I would finish one, and they'd keep me right online, and they'd run me to another, and it was just, okay, anyway. As I was going through those processes of interviews and talking, I had somebody ask me, what's been the greatest change in leadership? And I said, let me tell you what it's been. In the 1980s, the key word was management. If you went into a bookstore, you wanted to buy a management book so you could manage people. In the 1990s, we went from management to leadership because all of a sudden things were changing so quick, you could no longer manage them. You had to get in front of them. You had to lead them. You see, management assumes that everything will stay the same. Leadership assumes that everything will change. So in the 90s was when I started writing a lot of leadership books. Leadership really became hot. Then what happened is as we turned into this decade, in this century, we went from leadership to now it's team leadership. What kind of a leadership team can you put around them? One of the things I like about Team National is that you really are committed to team leadership. You're really committed to develop a team of leaders. Okay. Now, as you learn the 21 laws, I want you to remember the following. 1, these laws can be learned. You can learn these laws. They're all teachable. They're all transferable. In fact, look at your neighbor and tell him, even you can learn these laws. Tell him that way. Even you. Okay. 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 Now, I notice some of you are trying to tell the person which laws they should learn. 2, these laws can stand alone. All of these laws can stand by themselves. It's not like you're building a brick home. You got to have law 1 to have law 2 to law 3. They don't have to be in sequence. They don't have to be in order. 3, these laws carry consequences. Each one of these 21 irrefutable laws of leadership, if you do them, you'll be successful leader. If you really don't do them, you'll be very unsuccessful. In fact, I was lecturing on the 21 laws several years ago now. And I had a guy come up to me during a break, and he said, John, he said, I've read the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and I just want you to know I don't agree with one of your laws. And I smiled, and I said, that's okay. And I'm going on signing books. And he says, no, you don't understand. He said, I've read your book, and one of your laws I don't agree with. And I said, no, that's okay. That's okay. And I'm back to signing books. Now, it's bothering him that it's not bothering me, that it bothers him. And so he comes back again. He says, I don't think you understand. I don't agree with one of your laws. Finally, I stopped. I said, friend, it's okay. You don't have to agree with my laws. First of all, I didn't write the book to make you happy. I wrote the book to help you. I'm training leaders, not clowns. So making you happy isn't like my goal in life. I'm trying to help you. And then I said, but let me explain it this way. I said, it's like the law of gravity. You don't have to agree with the law of gravity. It's still the law of gravity. And if you think not, jump, go to a 4-story building and jump out. In a split second, you'll buy into the law of gravity. See, the laws of leadership are the laws of leadership. And what I want you to understand is they're the laws of leadership. And if you learn them and you learn to apply them to your life, you'll be a very successful leader. And if you don't learn them, then to be honest with you, you won't be successful. Now, one more thought, and then we're going to teach the two new laws. Number four, these laws are the foundation of leadership. Let me tell you something we did in the revised part of the 21 laws that I just love. When you get the book, the 21 Laws of Leadership, the revised edition, if you go to the back of the book, we did a couple of things. One is we did an evaluation that you can take on each one of the laws and how well you do it. We put an evaluation in the back that you can go around and you can evaluate yourself. How well do I do one of the laws? I'll tell you what else. The evaluation is not only for you, but it's for your team members. You can literally evaluate your team. And from a 1 to a 10, you can put a number on everybody's head and basically say, I'm a 6 in this area. I'm a 9 in this area. And we put an evaluation. And the second thing we did is with every law of leadership, we put every resource that I've ever written on that subject in other books, et cetera, in there. So if you're weak in an area, you say, okay, these are the areas that I'm going to study for myself. So we put an evaluation and we put a resource section in the back of the book that will help you know where you stand in the 21 Laws of Leadership. And even more importantly, perhaps what you need to learn to be better in an area. So, okay, the two new laws, let's go. Number one is the law of addition. And the law of addition just simply says leaders add value by serving others. Leaders add value by serving others. And in your notes, I have for you to read on your own, because of time today I won't, the Jim Senegal story, who is the CEO of Costco. And basically the bottom line is how he serves others, how he serves his company, okay? Now, you'll read that on your own because of time. I want to go on into the lesson just a little bit. Here's what I want you to ask yourself as a leader. I want you to ask yourself this question. Since I'm leading my team, are things better for them or are things worse? Okay? Am I adding value to them or am I subtracting value from them? I have a book that's coming out called Leadership Gold. It's of 26 most important lessons I've learned as a leader. And one of the lesson titles and one of the chapters is on the subject of this. It basically, the leadership title is to see how a leader is doing, look at the people. If you really want to see. So are my people better off because I'm a leader? Now, here's a leadership question I want you to ask yourself. Am I taking others to a higher level? Am I taking others to a higher level? Stay right with me in your notes. There's a Schwarzkopf quote that's a good quote. You can read that on your own. The bottom line is leadership isn't how far we advance ourselves, but how far we advance others. And in your leading, as I just referred to it, you're either adding or subtracting. If you're adding to others, it's intentional. If you're subtracting from others, I think it's unintentional. Now, let me call a timeout and let me just talk to you about what I've just said, and let me kind of put some foundation under what I've just shared with you. As leaders, There's a tendency for us to get people to do things for us. Boy, if I could get them on my team, if I could do, and we begin to think of our benefits. Now, I'm not being critical of that. I think that's human nature. Let me ask you a question here. How many of you, when you develop people or develop team, thought about, boy, this is going to be a benefit, this is going to help me? I mean, how many of you have ever felt that? Okay, to be honest, if the person didn't raise their hand beside you, they weren't honest. Okay. But don't talk to them about it now, okay? Deal with that later, all right? Okay, now. My life was changed in 1975. I was in Dayton, Ohio, and at a Coliseum, and I heard for the first time, who now has become a wonderful friend of mine, Zig Ziglar, talk about if you will help other people get what they want, then those people will help you get what you want. And my life was changed. Now, I'm going to tell you what I was changed on. Up until that moment in 1975, I was a leader who was constantly looking for people to help me. Are you with me? What can you do for me? How can I get you on the team? I mean, okay, boy, if they're on my team, look what this will do for me. All of a sudden, Zig helped me to understand that as a leader, I had it turned upside down, that I needed to turn it completely around and say, no, my goal is to help people. Robert Louis Stevenson said, I love this quote, he said, the success of my day is determined by the seeds I sow, not by the harvest I reap. In other words, the success of my day is going to be based upon my ability to help people, to add value to people. Okay, stay right with me. John Wooden on teamwork. Selfishness is the greatest challenge of a coach. Most players are more concerned with making themselves better than the team. The result, seldom do the best players make the best team. John Wooden described an unselfish player as one who showed, I love this phrase, an eagerness to lose himself to the group for the goal of the team. And I want you to note that this definition of John Wooden's describes an intentional person who adds value to others. Stay with me right in your notes. We're just going to stay right here. Adding value to others through service doesn't just benefit the people being served. It allows the leader to experience the following: fulfillment in leading others, leadership with the right motives. Boy, that's for certain. The ability to perform significant acts as a leader. The development of a leadership team. And finally, an attitude of service on the team. Especially when this is all demonstrated from a leader's perspective. We're going to stay right in our notes. We got a lot of stuff to cover. I have developed 4 guidelines to help me add value to others. 3 of them are fundamental and can be used by anyone desiring to practice the law of addition. The 4th is based on my faith. Number 1, we add value to others when we truly value others. Daryl Hartley Leonard, who retired as chairman of the board of Hyatt Hotels Corporation, currently chairman and chief executive officer of Production Group International, says, when a person moves into a position of authority, he or she gives up the right to abuse people. There's a fine line between manipulating people and motivating them. And that line is crossed when the leader doesn't value people. Let's go on. I'm told that in American Sign Language, the sign for serving is to hold the hands out in front with the palms up and to move them back and forth between the signer and the signee. And really, that is a good metaphor for the attitude that servant leaders should possess. They should be open, trusting, caring, offering their help, and willing to be vulnerable. Leaders who add value by serving believe in their people before their people believe in them. And they serve others before they are served. Okay, let me talk to you. Quick timeout. My organization, Equip, that trains leaders internationally, as we travel, the number one challenge we run into is the challenge of leaders who have position and power lording it over people who don't. And remember the game we used to play when we were kids? How many of you played the game King of the Hill? You know what I'm talking about? One kid gets on, you know, and everybody else tries to get on the hill. You know, okay. When I watch leaders, a lot of times they're still playing King of the Hill. They're trying to beat everybody else down so they can stay up on top of the whole process. And so one of the things I do, and this is a visual, but our maximum impact, as you're listening to this CD, you can get the picture. One of the things we'll do is I'll bring up a person out of the audience, and what I'll do is I'll push them down. And as I push them down, as I push them down, what happens to me? I go down with them. You cannot push someone down and keep them down without staying down yourself. Just as if you are lifting them up and pulling them up and bringing them to a higher level, what happens to you? You go up to a higher level also. See, what happens is in leadership, if we don't understand the law of addition, that we add value to others by serving them, if we don't understand servanthood, a lot of times we'll think, well, I'll just push them down and never understand the value of helping bring them up. Go back to your notes. We first of all add value to others when we truly value others. Secondly, we add value to others when we make ourselves more valuable to them. When we make ourselves more valuable to them, we begin to lift them up. Stay with me in your notes. The whole idea of adding value to other people depends on the idea that you have something of value to add. You can't give what you don't possess. What do you have to give others? Can you teach skills? Can you give opportunities? Can you give insight, perspective, gain through experience? None of these things comes without a price. If you have skills, you gain them through study and practice. If you have opportunities to give, you acquire them through hard work. If you possess wisdom, you gain it by intentionally evaluating the experiences that you've had. I underline this next sentence. The more intentional you have been in growing personally, the more you have to offer. The more you continue to pursue personal growth, the more you will continue to have to offer. So there are two excellent questions to ask yourself. Question number one, who did I add value to today? And question number two, what did I learn today? Because those two questions are related. You can't add value to people that you're not learning, and if you're not learning, you can't add value. It's both. So let's talk about teachability for a moment. Teachability is not determined by age, but increased age means an increased chances that bad habits and character traits are more permanently ingrained. Neither is teachability directly related to giftedness. Again, there may be an inverse relationship. The more talented the leader, the more difficult it will be for him or her to be teachable because she may have been able to coast on giftedness. Give me a humble, teachable leader any day over the most talented person on the planet. Okay, teachability requires repeated, long, hard looks in the mirror. It means constantly evaluating your effectiveness and developing new skills to meet the challenges of your current situation. It requires asking, am I the bottleneck here? And having the courage to make changes if the answer comes back, yes. It involves looking at your previous track record and recognizing that a history of repeated failures or bad experiences may reflect solely on yourself. And it requires a commitment to grow in the context of community by letting others speak into your life. The teachable leader creates a culture where others can see the specks in their eyes because their leader is willing to pull the beam out of his own eye first. It is only when we are willing to learn from our mistakes that we will reduce the likelihood of repeating them. In my book, Winning with People, I have what I call the learning principle. We're talking about teachability. Here's the learning principle. Each person we meet has potential to teach us something. Here we are at the convention center in New Orleans with Team National. And I've got a quote from New Orleans, one of their most recognized citizens, the late, great Louis Armstrong, who said, there are some people that if they don't know, you can't tell them. Talk to me. Huh? Isn't that true? How many of you know somebody like that? Yeah. You know what the next question is, don't you? How many of you are seated beside that person? Now's your time to tell them, huh? People fit into one of the following categories. No one can teach me anything. That's the arrogant attitude. Someone can teach me everything. That's the naive attitude. And everyone can teach me something. That's a teachable attitude. So how can we have a teachable attitude? Number one, make learning your passion. Make learning your passion. Management expert Philip Crosby notes, there's a theory of human behavior that says people subconsciously retard their own intellectual growth. They come to rely on cliches and habits. Once they reach the age of their own personal comfort with the world, they stop learning and their mind runs on idle for the rest of their days. They may progress organizationally, they may be ambitious, they may be eager. They may even work night and day, but they learn no more. Number two, develop relationships with growth potential. In other words, hang around with people that are growing. I have had this practice for many years. Time out just for a second. And that is every month I have what I call a learning lunch. And what I do is I sit down and I book a lunch with somebody that's faster, quicker, smarter than me. And I sit down, I buy the meal, I don't eat, I just ask questions and take notes, and I just listen to them, and I let them teach me from out of their life. In your notes, as Donald Clifton and Paula Nelson, authors of Soar With Your Strengths, observe, relationships help us define who we are and what we become. Number three, ask questions. Learning begins with listening, but it doesn't end there. Hans Kung asserted, understanding someone properly involves learning from him, and learning from someone properly involves changing oneself. Change is always the goal of learning. You cannot have growth without change. Okay. So, we add value to others when we want truly value others. Number two, when we make ourselves more valuable to others. Number three, when we add value to others when we know and relate to what others value. Inexperienced leaders are quick to lead before knowing anything about the people they intend to lead. But mature leaders listen, learn, and then lead. And then finally, we add value to others when we do the things that God values. Four ways to add value to them. Let's talk about the law of the picture. That's the second new law in the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. People do what people see. Now, I tell the story of 9/11 and Rudy Giuliani, and there's a whole story there, just like the CEO of Costco, that you can read on your own. So we'll skip the story. That's for you to just read on your own. That'll kind of enforce the law of the picture that people do what people see. Here's the question. Here's the question I have for you today. How many of you have learned to lead by watching a leader? Would you raise your hand? I would say in the auditorium, it's 80% of the people have raised their hand. I learned to lead by watching a leader. That's all that the law of the picture is about. The law of the picture basically says people do what people see. And if they see it long enough, they'll begin to catch it or pick it up. So in your notes, mission provides purpose. In other words, it answers the question, why? Why are we doing something? Vision provides a picture, which answers the question, what are we doing? Strategy provides a plan, which answers the question, how are we going to do it? Okay. So here's the question for all of us. How does a leader bridge the vision gap between them and the followers? Because a lot of times there's a big vision gap between what the leader sees and what the people see. In your notes. The leader's effective communication of the vision makes the picture clear. In other words, if you or I communicate the vision well, it brings clearness to the picture. But a leader's effective modeling of the vision makes the picture come alive. The picture has breath and life to it once the leader begins to model it. So let's talk about that. That's not to say that leaders have all the answers. Anyone who has led anything knows that. I underline this next sentence. The leaders who make the greatest impact are often those who lead well in the midst of uncertainty. Andy Stanley, an excellent leader and a communicator, wonderful friend, has addressed this issue. A few years ago at the Catalyst Conference for Leaders, here's what he said. Boy, this next sentence, it's powerful. Uncertainty is not an indication of poor leadership. Rather, it indicates a need for leadership. The nature of leadership demands that there will always be an element of uncertainty. And the temptation is to think, if I were a good leader, I would know exactly what to do. Increased responsibility means dealing with more and more intangibles and therefore more complex uncertainty. Here we go. Here's the sentence. Leaders can afford to be uncertain, but we cannot afford to be unclear. People will not follow fuzzy leadership. So let's talk about how do you and I flesh out the vision? How do we model the vision for our people so they can pick up on it? Okay, here we go. Number one, followers are always watching what you do. That's just part of leadership. Leadership is very visual. In the paragraph, if you're a parent and you have probably already realized that your children are always watching what you do, say anything you want, but your children learn more from what they see than anywhere else. As parents, Margaret and I realized this early. No matter what we taught our children, they insisted on behaving like us. Now that was disgusting. How frustrating. Legendary UCLA basketball coach John Wooden quotes a poem that explains it perfectly. No written word nor spoken plea can teach our youth what they should be. Not all the books on all the shelves. It's what the teachers are themselves. People do what people see. It's the law of the picture. How do we learn? 89% visual, 10% audio, and 1% through the other senses. Colin Powell observed, you can issue all the memos and give all the motivational speeches you want, but if the rest of the people in your organization don't see you putting forth your very best effort every single day, they won't either. So, followers are always watching what you do. The second statement is, boy, if this is going to be true, when you write this one down, it's going to be true. It's easier to teach what's right than to do what's right. Boy, isn't that the truth? Have you all found that to be true, huh? Isn't it just easier to, boy, you just say, oh, teaching this stuff is so easy. Living this stuff is so hard. Writer Mark Twain quipped, to do what is right is wonderful. To teach what is right is even more wonderful and much easier. Isn't that the truth? It is always easier to teach what's right than to do it. That's one of the reasons why many parents and bosses say, do as I say, not as I do. Time out here just for a second. In my middle 20s as a young leader, and most of you know that my background was for 25 years I was a pastor. And when I was first doing my teaching, I really ran up to this issue of, should I teach something that I don't understand, or should I teach something that I don't yet live? And as I look back on my early development as a young leader, I made a decision. I didn't realize at that time what an important decision it would be, but I made a decision. And the decision was I wouldn't teach anything to people that I didn't live myself. Now, what that meant is there were sometimes I brought in another speaker. Are you with me? And say, it's your subject. You know what? Good luck. You know what I mean? I'm pulling for you, okay? Little did I realize that that decision, how it would positively affect my life. In other words, if I didn't live it, I wasn't going to teach it. Back in your notes, our author, Norman Vincent Peale, stated, nothing is more confusing than people who give good advice but set a bad example. I would say related to that thought, nothing is more convincing than people who give good advice and set a good example. I was just recently interviewed by USA Today. And they were wanting to talk to me about the corporations and companies teaching business ethics. And the question they basically were posing to me, because I've written on business ethics, the question they were kind of posing to me, they were saying, John, is it possible to teach ethics to people in a company? And my answer was, yes, if it goes beyond just a classroom. Yes, if it goes beyond a teaching lesson. I said, you not only need to teach business ethics, but then the company has to see the leaders model that ethics. Here's what I know. You can't teach it and not model it and have it be effective. You've got to do what I call the double reinforcement. You got to teach it. What you say and what you do has got to be congruent. It's got to match up. John Wooden used to tell his players, show me what you can do. Don't tell me what you can do. Number three, we should work on changing ourselves before trying to improve others. That's disgusting, isn't it? Doesn't that just disgust you? I mean, don't you wish I had worded it? We should work on changing ourselves after trying to improve others. That before, doesn't that before bother you, huh? Okay, let's go on. Leaders are responsible for the performance of their people. The buck stops with them. They accordingly monitor their people's progress, give them direction, hold them accountable. And to improve the performance of the team, leaders must act as change agents. However, here we go, an important sentence. A great danger to good leadership is the temptation to try to change others without first making changes to yourself. As a leader, the first person I need to lead is me. The first person that I should try to change is me. My standards of excellence should be higher for myself than what I set for others. To remain a credible leader, I must always work first, hardest and longest on changing myself. This is neither easy nor natural, but it is essential. I was lecturing on the 360-degree leader. That's a book I wrote a couple of years ago on leading from the middle of the pack. And it talked about leading people up, influencing people up, influencing people beside you, influencing people down. And during the Q&A, a fellow asked me, he said, John, which is the hardest? Is it harder to lead people above you, lead people beside you, or lead people below you? And I smiled and I knew I threw him a curve. I said, none of the above. Well, he said, John, you've been talking about the 360-degree leader. Which is harder, leading people above you, beside you, and below you? I said, none of the above. I said, the hardest person to lead is me. In other words, if I could kick the person most responsible for my problems, I wouldn't be able to sit down for a week. You understand? Are you with me, huh? This is not in your notes, but I love it. So just let me read it to you. I'm a lot like Lucy in the Peanuts comic strip, who tells Charlie Brown that she wants to change the world. And when an overwhelmed Charlie Brown asks where she would start, her response is, I would start with you, Charlie Brown. I would start with you. Isn't that the way we are? Well, I'd like to change the world. Come up here. We're going to start with you. Number four. The most valuable gift a leader can give is being a good example. It's the most wonderful gift the leader can give his or her people is by being a good example. A survey conducted by Opinion Research Corp asked American workers to select the one trait that was most important for a person to lead them, and here are the results. And you see the top six ranked characteristics. Number one, leading by example. 26% said, I want my leader to lead by example. And now notice number two. Number two is strong ethics or morals. That's 19%. Well, you can already see almost half the people said, I want modeling, I want a good example. Then number three was knowledge of the business, 17%. Number four was fairness, 14%. Number five was overall intelligence and competence, that was 13%. And number six was recognition of employees, 10%. You see, more than anything else, employees want leaders whose beliefs and actions line up. They want good models who lead them from the front. Leadership is more caught than taught. How does one catch leadership? By watching good leaders in action. The majority of leaders emerge because of the impact made on them by established leaders who modeled leadership and mentored them. Let me close this lesson with one more conversation I had recently with John Wooden. In our time together, he said to me, "John, the most important question a leader can ask is, how can I improve my team?" He said, "I think that's the most important." As a coach, he said, "Every day that I coached, every day I got up and I asked myself, how can I improve my team?" He said, "You know what I did when I was with other coaches and leaders?" He said, "When I was with other coaches and leaders, you know what I'd ask them? How do you improve your team? How do you make your team better?" He said, "Every place I went, in fact," he said, "I would talk to my players and I'd say, how can I make you better? What can I do to add value to you?" Now, when Coach Wooden was saying, the question they constantly asked was, how could he improve his team? I got to thinking about that. And I thought about the two laws, the two new laws in the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership revised. I thought of the two new laws. And I thought, if you and I would just do those two laws, think of how we would improve our team. The law of addition says that leaders add value by serving others. Think how much more we would improve our team if we would have a servant's heart and a servant's attitude. And think how much more we would improve our team if we just obeyed the law of the picture. People do what people see, and we begin to model that for our people. This is my hope for you here at Team National in New Orleans. This is what my hope is for the thousands of people who listen to this CD. You're in a car, you're in an office, perhaps you're having a meal and listening to the CD. Here's my prayer. Here's my hope. Here's what I desire. I desire that the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership and these two new laws that I just talked about today will take your leadership to a whole new level, and that through serving others and modeling and being an example for others, you truly will begin to every day improve and add value to your team.